Good day, everyone, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange conference call. Today's call is being recorded. Now, for introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Joseph Lamb. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Michael, and welcome to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange. Today's topic is WebSphere Commerce Version 6 Deployment. Today's presenters are Eileen Kwan and Scott Gumini. Eileen is a member of the FS Technical Services team who specializes in configuration, customization, deployment, and performance tuning on a highly scaled WebSphere Commerce environment. She provides both remote and on-site technical assistance to customers via service engagements. Scott is a key architect on the Commerce team, and he is responsible for architecting the product installers, configuration utilities, and migration strategy. Scott is also the WebSphere Commerce compatibility champion and is responsible for ensuring that the product is compatible between releases. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Eileen and Scott.
Thank you, Joseph. Let's go to page 2. Today's presentation is first of a two-part series on WebSphere Commerce version 6 deployment. In part 1, which is today's presentation, we will cover the basics of version 6 deployment, focusing on the changes in WASP version 6 and how commerce customization should be properly deployed. We will first cover how WASP manages the application, go through an example of installing a full application, then we will discuss how updates to the application should be deployed using both the WASP main console and the scripting tool. We will also show you examples of both a full application update as well as a partial application update. Here we will highlight a key change in strategy on version 6 compared to version 5. In addition, today's presentation has actually been delivered by Scott to a few business partners in December of last year. It is going to be a repeat of that same presentation. However, next week at the same time, we will present new materials in part 2. That presentation will expand into deployment on a version 6 clustered environment. We will go through an example of configuration, customization deployment, and six-pack installation. We will also discuss topics including federation, synchronization, replication, and tips on how to minimize production downtime during change deployment. So we strongly encourage you to book the time aside and attend that meeting as well. Page 3, please. On this page, you see a picture of an unmanaged WASP node in a single server environment. Recall the definition of a node is a logical grouping of managed servers. It usually corresponds to a physical computer system with a distinct IP host address. The configuration repository is a set of XML files, or the config directory, that represent the configuration of the application server profile and its assets. The configuration service provides a mechanism to manage these XML files. The other gray shaded box is an application server JVM, for example, server 1. The application server runs a J2EE application such as the admin console app that comes with server 1. And starting in version 6, WebSphere Commerce application is also running on server 1, as opposed to running on its own application server JVM back in the version 5.x days. Inside the server are runtime services such as the logging service. When the server starts, it reads the XML configuration for the logging service. The service has a set of properties that can be changed. If you want to change the properties of the service while it is in memory, the MBeans provides that mechanism. MBeans are available for a variety of purposes. You can go to the WASP Information Center for a list of them. There is an application manager MBean that can be used to start applications. The WASP admin console is a J2EE application that provides a GUI interface to both the config service and MBeans. It allows you to manage the configuration files listed under the configuration tab and the runtime settings or MBeans under the runtime tab. Page 4, please. Here's a picture of a managed WASP infrastructure. Through federation, you can move unmanaged node into a new cell managed by a deployment manager or DMGR. Deployment Manager is a single central point of management. It is a JVM that can manage the configuration and runtime attributes of any node or object in itself. A cell can contain multiple nodes and multiple servers. Each server will have MBeans running inside so the admin console can control the runtime state of these objects. MBeans are in constant communication with other nodes within the cell. The deployment manager manages the master configuration. This configuration is synchronized regularly with other nodes in the cell. Changes to the configuration should only be done via the deployment manager. Next page, please. So from this point, Scott will go through the rest of the presentation.
Thank you, everybody. So now that Eileen's given us sort of a context that we're sitting within, we'll go through some of the common application management tasks. You'll notice that we're focusing a lot on WebSphere application server in this discussion. One of the fundamental changes that we made in 6.0 for commerce is that you can manage commerce just like any other J2EE application. So you don't have to learn any new management techniques when you start using WebSphere Commerce 6. In terms of the application management area, some common tasks are installing an application, updating an application, configuring an application such as binding it to a particular data source or a virtual host, and distributing the application throughout your environment. This distribution process is typically automatic, but you can control that as well. As we mentioned earlier, there are several interfaces to these tasks. There's the graphical web-based console, as I'm sure you guys are all familiar with. There is the Java APIs, or a set of Java APIs using the Java Management Extensions protocol are provided if you want to write a Java program that manipulates the WebSphere configuration. Or you have the scripting utility, the WSAdmin utility, that allows you to script certain actions against the WebSphere configuration and the runtime MBeans as well. This utility actually provides several languages. TCL or Jackal is one of the languages, and Jython is another. Now let's move to slide 6. So let's talk a little bit about application packaging, because that will sort of drive some of the discussions that we have. So I'm sure it's an overview for everybody, but let's just kind of go through the motions here. A J2EE application is packaged inside an EAR file, and this is just a special zip file that has information about the application. The EAR file is divided into smaller pieces within that zip file, or other zip files within the zip. But the idea is that the EAR file contains all of the binaries required to run the application. If you're familiar with WebSphere Commerce 5.x, that was not the case. There were a lot of assets outside of the application that made it difficult to do things such as clustering. So Eileen will get into some of the details on clustering in the next discussion, but to facilitate clustering, to better follow the management functions inside the application server, we've actually moved all of the assets required at runtime into the Commerce EAR. So this is very important when you deploy your assets. Your assets now must be deployed into the Commerce EAR. This EAR file is broken down into modules. So there will be web modules, which are responsible for web-related activities, EJB modules, which Commerce typically uses to persist data to our database, J2C connectors, which allow you to connect to various types of systems, and other assets, such as utility jar files, configuration files, etc. In addition to these actual binaries, the code of your application, there are deployment descriptors or metadata that describes the application. For example, the application.xml describes the application as a whole. Web.xml will describe the actual web module, EJB jar for an EJB. Each module typically has its own configuration, its own metadata underneath the meta inst directory in that module. For a web module, there are two special subdirectories underneath web inst, classes and lib. Those subdirectories actually contain application binaries, so class files and jar files for the web module. Let's move to the next slide, number 7. So here's a screenshot of the Commerce application package. As you can see, we have many EJB modules and many web modules. There are new web modules in 6.0 that you may not have seen before. You can read information on those modules if you need to. And let's move on to slide number 8. So let's talk about the application installation process first and go over that process, and then we can talk about how you update an application after it's been installed. The actual application installation process is done for you by WebSphere Commerce Configuration Manager. So you should never have to actually install the Commerce EAR file yourself. But this is just going to set up some context for the future conversations that we'll have. So the input to the installation process is an EAR file that follows the J2EE packaging rules. When you install the application, because the WebSphere environment is distributed, there's the concept of a remote deployment manager, a remote administrative client, a web browser involved in the picture. You have a couple locations that you can store the application file itself as before it gets uploaded to the environment. You could store it on the client machine. So, for example, if you're using the web client, you would store that gear file on the web client file system, or you could actually store it on the server file system. And when you install the application, it will ask you where it is, whether it's on the client machine or on the server machine. First step before we actually start installing the application, as I mentioned, this was done for you by Config Manager already, is to start the server that manages your configuration. So if you're in an unfederated or a non-managed environment, this would be server one. If you're in a deployment manager, a managed environment, you would start your deployment manager. As Eileen said, all of the configuration actions in a federated environment must be done via the deployment manager. I'll quickly walk through an example installing the application via the WAS admin console and then get into some of the specifics about what happens in behind the pictures. So the first step is to point your web browser at the admin console URL. Every environment will have a just slightly different URL. The port number varies depending on your environment. Let's move on to the next slide, number 9. So you'd log onto the console, you would select Applications in the navigation panel, and you would select Install Applications. Then it'll bring you a panel as shown here that asks you to specify, well, where is the application that you need to install? So where's the source of the application? And this is where you can select either a local file system, meaning it's on the client file system, in this case the web browser's machine, or you could select remote file system, meaning that it's already on the server file system somewhere, so the deployment manager file system. You would enter that information, and you would click Next. And what WAS will do is it will transfer the application from your client machine to the deployment manager's machine so that it can perform the processing that needs to be done. So let's move on to the next slide, slide number 10. So one of the first panels you're going to get is this panel that allows you to override default binding information. So binding information are things such as which data source to use for my EJB module, or any JNDI names of my EJB module, the host name or the virtual host to use for a web module. So it gives me the opportunity to override anything that was in that source ear file at the ear level. So you could take the opportunity to assign all of your EJB modules a single data source, which is the way Configuration Manager does it. All of our EJB modules out of the box use a single commerce database. So you would select things like the items that I've circled. So you can generate default bindings for things that don't have default bindings. That's the first oval that's selected. The second oval is to give you the ability to actually override any binding information that's actually inside the ear file, the source ear file. And the third option allows you to provide default binding information for the EJB module. Once you've selected that, it's that initial binding, quote, sort of global binding information, you can click on the next button to proceed to the next page. So during this process, the application server is analyzing the ear file and using that metadata information that I described to figure out which options to display to the user as they're installing the application. So let's move on to the next slide, number 11. So the next panel is going to be the security warning panel. In J3EE, you can identify a security policy. So this gives you the opportunity to look at the security policy and decide whether or not you want to accept it. So if you want to accept it, you click continue. If you don't want to, you click cancel. So let's move on to slide number 12 then. What you're going to get in the next step is a wizard. You're going to get a certain number of steps. The number of steps is going to vary based on the actual application itself. Some applications will have more steps than others just because they have different content in the application. But the wizard is going to guide you through the steps. Any step that's actually required is going to have a star beside it. So in my example, none of my steps are required because I defaulted all of the information at the beginning. So I could actually just jump to the very last step, which is the summary step. In the next few slides, I'll show you some of the key steps involved in the process. So let's move on to slide number 13, lucky number 13. So one of the first things that you have to do, or one of the key things that you have to do, is you have to identify which server the application should run on. So in a deployment manager environment, you're going to have many servers, many nodes that you can pick from. So during this process, if you're doing this manually, as I said, Config Manager already does this for you, but if you're doing this manually, the typical approach that you would use is you would map all modules to an application server or a cluster. Any web module actually needs to be mapped to an application server and a web server, because web modules are web-related assets, and they need to be associated with a web server, so you must map them to this concept of a web server. And EJB modules, typically you assign them to an application server, the same application server as the rest of the modules. But if the EJB module contains web services, that's another web-related activity, so it must be assigned a web server as well. So it has to be mapped to a web server and an application server. And I gave you a simple screenshot that shows you how you can do that. Let's move to slide number 14. The next important thing you'll have to specify is data sources for EJB modules. As I said, that you could specify it at the very beginning, a default for the entire application, which is how Configuration Manager does it. But if you're installing a custom application, you'll be given the opportunity to assign each EJB module a different data source if you wanted to. But typically, you would assign them all to the same data source. Let's move on to the next page, then. The next option is to map resource references to resources. So inside one of your modules, you could declare that I need access to something like a URL or another EJB, and I make it as a reference to another EJB. Well, the application management code inside WebSphere is going to detect that you have this reference, and it's going to give you the opportunity to define what that reference really needs to use. We can move on to the next slide now. Same. And one of the last things that you'll be asked for is to identify for each web module the virtual host to use. So the virtual host gives you the ability to specify which hostname and port should be used for a particular web module. So I provided you with the default mapping for WebSphere Commerce on this page. That's all handled for you from Configuration Manager. And be very careful if you're assigning or altering the WebSphere Commerce virtual host. You can quite easily generate a situation where WebSphere application server gets confused about which module gets mapped to which server or which virtual host, and you'll get 404 errors from the web server stating that it can't actually find your application. So be very careful if you're attempting to change those. Let's move on to slide number 17. And then at the very end, you'll get this summary page that I talked about. It just sort of summarizes the application and some of the options you selected, and then you can click on the next button or the finish button, and that will actually kick off the actual installation process. So up until this point in time, it's just been collecting information about how to configure the application. It actually hasn't installed the application and made it usable at this point. So when you click on Next, well, what actually happens? So let's move to the next slide, slide number 18. So what happens is the application server will take a copy of the EAR file, and it stores it in the configuration repository. It actually stores the EAR file itself as a zip file. Underneath the profile, config, cells, your cell name, application, / the application name, so wc_demo, for example, for commerce.ear, / the name of the ear file itself. So you would typically see something like wc_demo.ear/wc_demo.ear, whereas the last entry is the actual file. Then what the application server does is it takes all of those configuration settings that you specified, it updates these metadata deployment descriptor information, and it actually stores those in the configuration repository as well. So those go underneath the profile directory, config, cells, cell name, application, the application name.ear, / deployment, / the application name. So underneath this directory, you'll see a subdirectory for each module. Within that subdirectory, you'll have all of the metadata information underneath there with the options that you selected at installation time. So, for example, if it's an EJB module, inside one of the files underneath that directory, you'll see the actual JNDI name of the data source to be used for that module. And remember that it's the application server that's managing this directory for you. So never go in there and change the files yourself. That could cause problems. Always use the supported tooling provided by Web3 Application Server to manage that configuration. There's also some other information that's recorded in this deployment.xml file. So that's stored underneath the config repository cell, cell name, application, application name, / deployment, / application name, / deployment.xml. So it's a crazy directory structure, but it's all very organized, and it's built that way because of how the application management infrastructure creates objects for these things. Inside this deployment.xml file, you'll see things like the class loader policy. So we have a unique class loader policy for commerce, we set a single class loader for the entire application, which is not a standard J2EE class loader policy. It'll also store things like the deployment target, so which server the application has been mapped to. So that's storing everything in the configuration repository, but it actually there's actually another copy of the application stored elsewhere. So let's move to slide number 19. Slide number 19 will show you sort of a screenshot of the configuration directory, so you can take a quick look at that. Key thing to note here is that there's actually an option for the metadata. The application server gives you the ability to use the metadata from the configuration repository, which is the default, or it gives you the ability to use alternate metadata from the actual EAR file itself. So I highly recommend that you stay with the default. That's the way Configuration Manager sets it up for you. I've very rarely seen anybody use the other option. And the other key comment is that whenever you change the configuration in the admin tooling, it updates this deployment directory for you automatically. So always use the admin tooling to update the configuration, and you can be guaranteed that the right thing will happen. Let's move on to slide number 20. Okay, so this is the distribution process. So after WAS stores all of the information about the application in the configuration repository, and a copy of the application in the configuration repository, it's ready to distribute that application to the machines that actually need it. So when you installed it, you specified it to run it on this server on node A. So what's going to happen is the deployment manager in this example, if you're not using a deployment manager, it's very simple. There's a single node in your environment and it's all done locally. But with a deployment manager, what's going to happen is it's going to send the EAR to the node that should be running that application. It actually sends it to the node agent, which is the process on that machine that manages the node. It will send it out to that node agent, and that node agent will process the application there. The key thing is that it's typically asynchronous. You install the application, the synchronization process, the distribution process is typically asynchronous. So, you know, you install the application. It doesn't necessarily mean that the application, after that's finished, that the application is actually on that node yet. It will take some time. And as I mentioned earlier, if you're not using a deployment manager, all of this stuff happens locally, so it's a little bit simpler in that scenario. Let's move on to slide number 21, and we'll talk a little bit about what happens on the node when the node agent gets the application and it informs that there's a new application that needs to run on that node. What it does is it's going to expand the application into the installed apps directory. So the installed apps directory is the directory that's used at runtime. So when the JVM starts and starts your application, the actual EJB jars, Java files, actually come from that installed apps directory. So the key message here is that there are actually two copies of your application. There's one in the configuration repository, and there's one used at runtime in the installed apps directory. And so that's going to be very important when we talk about the correct procedure to update the application a little bit later. But when it expands this application, the default installation directory is going to be underneath your profile directory, installed app, cell name, / application name .ear, so wc_demo.ear. Key message here is that the cell name in this path can be a little bit confusing sometimes. When you start off with Commerce, you have a standalone environment. So you have a sort of a self-contained cell. There's a cell with a single server in it that manages itself. It's going to have cell name A, let's say. When I federate to a deployment manager, what happens is I become part of a different cell. I'm expanding my cell by adding myself into another cell, and my cell name could change from A to B. So now I'm participating in cell B. Well, in the installed apps directory, this cell name is always hard-coded. So when my cell name changes, the path to my EAR file never changes. So it will always be A in my case if my cell started with A. The path of the cell inside the configuration repository, so the first path that I have listed on this chart, always represents the current cell name. So after federation, I will have a config/cells/B, because B is my current cell name, but I will have an installed app /A/wc_demo.ear. So just keep note of that as you're building any sort of script. Sometimes we have customers who set file permissions in some directories. So just be conscious of that and so that it doesn't surprise you. So the other thing that happens when the EAR is expanded is the application server actually invokes some code provided by WebSphere Commerce. So we've actually plugged into an extension point in the file synchronization process to set permission in the WebSphere Commerce era. This is done via an iFix that WebSphere Commerce provides. It's provided by the Commerce team, but it's an iFix that actually gets installed against the WebSphere product itself. So it's very important that you have that iFix installed, otherwise you'll have file permission problems. So what happens is the ear gets expanded to this directory, the file permission code gets invoked, the WebSphere Commerce code figures out which file permission needs to be set underneath that ear directory, and we only set file permission underneath the ear directory. And so what we're doing is we're setting up file permissions so that the web server can actually access the static content that's inside that ear directory. Occasionally, this code can be delayed. It doesn't get invoked right away. We have a tech note that describes how to recover, but typically what happens is, in some cases, the directories in the tree up until the installed apps directory don't have the right permission. 755 is typically what we set. So if you're having a 404 error on some static content, so for example, you try to log into Accelerator, and the Accelerator page doesn't come up, you get a 404. That's quite often a file permission problem. So the first thing you should do in that case is, of course, check your web server log file first, but if you think that it's a file permission problem on the application server side, check the file permission of every directory up until that ear directory and make sure that it's correct. And then once you've confirmed that those directories are correct, try to identify which file you're trying to access in the ear and check the file permissions for those as well. Move on to slide number 22. Okay, so that was a quick overview of the application installation process. And like I said, this is done for you by Configuration Manager, so it's just meant as an example of the overall process so you can understand what happens when an application is installed. Next, we'll talk about how you actually update the application. So this is important. Commerce provides a framework for you to build your commerce site. Customizations are typically required, so everybody is going to go through a deployment of their customizations. Key message here is that it's different than it was before. We've done a lot of enhancements to meet the concepts inside Application Server so that you can take advantage of all of that application distribution clustering functionality in a better way. So the message is that, you know, follow the new procedure. If you don't follow the new procedure, you may get into trouble. And I'll talk a little bit later about some of the problems that you could encounter if you don't follow the new procedure. Okay, so what we're leveraging is we're leveraging this new feature in WebSphere version 6 called fine-grained application update. So the idea is that instead of installing a brand new application, you can give just a subset of the application, a delta as we call it, and the application server will handle merging that delta into the ear file for you. One key message is that you can't actually export the entire ear file from the rational environment today. So we don't support deploying the entire ear file back to the application server. What we've done and we've tested is deploying deltas to the application server. So the types of packages that we support are deploying an entire module. So I have a new EJB module, for example, that I want to add or delete or update an existing one in the application. I want to deploy a partial application. So these are things like a handful of JSPs or a handful of configuration files. And I can delete, add, update those. Or just a single file. I know that there's one JSP out there that has a mistake in it, and I want to deploy just that JSP. So they give you the option, the application server admin console gives you the option to deploy a single file. And you can also delete a single file if you wanted to, but to do that, you actually have to build a magical partial application to do that. And I'll talk a little bit about that later. So let's move on to slide number 23. Okay, so let's talk about each module, each type of update, and kind of go through the basics of how you would do these. So the first one is module. So what you would do is you would package your J2EE module as you normally would. So in this example, if you're using RAD, you would just export it from RAD, for example, as a module. So this could be an EJB jar or a web module. Then what you would do is you would go into the application server administrative console, and you would select the application. So you would find the application in the console. You would put a check mark beside it. And up at the top, you have a bunch of actions you can perform. One of them is update. So you would click on update. On the update panel, you're presented with the type of update or the type of package that you're providing for the update. So in this example, you would pick single module. You're deploying a single entire module to the Commerce application. And as I said, you can add modules, you can update modules, or you can delete modules. It's going to ask you two key questions. Which path should the module be inside the ear? So what's the relative path to the module within the ear. So it includes the module name. So if it's a web module and it's mywebmodule.war, you would just type in mywebmodule.war and it would add it to the root of the commerce ear. The next option is, well, where's the source of this module? The application server needs to know, well, what do I have to add to the application? So once again, you have the option to say local or remote. You would specify the actual path on your machine to the source module itself. And then you would click on next, and it would guide you through the process, very similar to how the application install process works. If it's an EJB module, it's going to ask you for EJB metadata information, configuration information. But the end result is that the module is either added to the ear, and that means all of the things that have to happen when you add a module, like updating the application.xml, etc., happens for you automatically underneath the covers. It's either added, updated, or deleted from the application, depending on your choice. And then the application is automatically restarted for you. So that's the key message here, is if you just save the configuration, the application server will actually restart the commerce application because it detects that it's changed. From my experience, file permission is actually not set during a module update. So be mindful of that. If you're doing a web module update, a complete web module update, file permission won't be set in that scenario. So let's move on to slide number 24. EJB modules are an interesting story. We'll get into a little bit about the complexities of EJB modules here because that will most typically impact you. So Commerce uses an EJB module. So the module itself is 2.x. Inside this module, we have a combination of beans. So we have some modules will have 2.0 beans and 1.1 beans inside the same module. And this adds to some complexity. And the key difference is that a 2.x bean requires what's called a CMP connection factory. It's a little bit different than a data source. And a 1.1 bean requires a data source. And this can be problematic when you have both of those inside the same EJB jar. So when you're doing EJB updates, what you'll probably see if you don't do it correctly is you'll see that the application server will use whatever the original CMP connection factory was. So inside RAD, the default CMP connection factory is a JNDI name of JDBC/WebSphere/Commerce/DB2/DataSource WC_demo, for example. But if your production environment isn't called demo, well, you're not going to have a data source that matches that. And WebSphere application server doesn't actually set the default CMP connection factor. So what this can cause is a problem when trying to use that EJB module. So it'll result in two different JNDI names for that EJB. You'll have the original CMP connection factory from the source module as you exported it from your source control, and you'll have the data source that you actually specified when WAS asked you for a data source. But what happens is when the EJB container tries to actually use your EJB, it uses the CMP connection factory, which will have an incorrect value, and you'll get an error message stating that it cannot look up the JNDI name of the CMP connection factory. So let's move on to slide number 25. I think we can get into more details here. So here's an example. The information, the binding information, is actually stored in a file called ibm-ejb-jar-bnd, bnd for binding, .xmi. And it's going to have two sections in it. It's going to have a section called default CMP connection factory, as shown. The text in red is an example from an environment that I created where I have an instance called Scott Test. So in that environment, my JNDI name was the data source for Scott Test, as you can see Scott Test in that area. But in my production environment, my instance is called Scott Prod, Prod for Production. So when I go to install this module into my application, WAS is going to ask me for my JNDI name, and I'm going to type in the one that says Scott Test, Scott Prod. I'm going to think that the application server is going to do the right thing. So let's move on to the next slide, slide 26. Well, WAS doesn't do the right thing in this case. It will update only the data source, but not the CMP connection factor. So what I will have is I will have a default data source that says Scott Prod, as shown in red, but I will have the default CMP connection factor from the previous slide with the original value. So when it tries to use my EJB module, I'll get an error message. So let's move on to slide number 27, and you'll see the error message that we get. So inside your systemout.log file, when somebody attempts to use that EJB module, you're going to get a message similar to this that says a naming exception, a name not found exception, when trying to look up a JNDI name for my data source with the name Scott Test. So really, the solution to this is to, during your build process, what I recommend is, as you're building that EJB module, so you may have an automated build process that actually compiles the code. What this tool can do is it can actually remove all data source information from the binding file. If you remove all data source information from the binding file, the application server is going to do the right thing. The other option that you can have is, before exporting, like if you're using RAD, for example, before exporting it, you can specify the correct target binding information in the module so that even though WAS doesn't set it for you, you know that it's correct. Okay, let's move on to slide number 28. We're quickly running out of time here, so we'll have to kick it up a little notch here. The other thing is when you're doing EJB updates, you may, here's an example of how to do it in a scripted fashion. So you can use a WSAdmin utility, give you a sample of how to actually add or update an EJB module inside the Commerce Ear. And the key thing is that there are some variables in my script. So for example, $JNDI name should be replaced with, you should either set that variable to be your JNDI name or you can replace it with a hard-coded JNDI name. The other thing is that you may see warning messages such as these no class def found errors. So for example, on Commerce Security Port Protectable. These typically can be ignored. It just means that your EJB module doesn't properly identify all required jar files. So let's move on to slide number 29. If you want to avoid these class not found errors, you can just update your manifest.mf for that EJB module and ensure that it has the correct class path specified. Okay, so let's move on to slide number 30. Partial applications. So in this example, what we're doing is we're taking a set of files. It's not an entire module. It may be a couple files, JSPs from the stored web module, and a couple configuration files from the root of the ear file. So what you want to do is you want to build a zip file, typically, that contains these assets, these new or changed assets, but the structure needs to match the structure of the ear. So it would be relative to the root of the ear. So in the example, I'm updating an index.jsp for my store. So inside my zip file, I would have a path stores.war/my/store/index.jsp. And I need to update a configuration file that's stored in the root of the ear. So I would have xml/my configuration file.xml. So you put these all within a zip file. You go to the administrative console. You walk through the process. Make sure that you pick partial application. Specify the zip file that contains your partial application. And what's going to happen is the application server is going to update the ear file with those new assets. No merging is done at the file level. So, for example, it won't merge two XML files together. It's just a replacement of the old XML file with the new XML file. There is an exception to this process, though. Jar files. Jar files are handled in a special way. So if I wanted to inject or replace a class file within a jar file, I can do that without replacing the entire jar. So if I build my zip file with the path correctly, it will actually recognize that one of those directories in the path is actually a jar file, and it will add or replace that particular file within it. So in my example, I have a directory called lib with myjar.jar within my ear file, and I want to add com/scott/myclass.class. So as long as I built my zip file correctly with this correct directory structure, it will recognize that myjar.jar is actually a jar file, and it will merge this file within that jar file. For delete, if you ever want to delete a file, you actually have to build a deployment descriptor, a descriptor that tells the application server which files to remove. So you declare this at a module level. So there's going to be one for the ear file, and there's going to be one for each module. So they all get put underneath the meta-inf directory for each module. So if I want to do one at the ear level, just in my zip file, I would create at the root of it, I would create a meta-inf directory slash, and I would create this file, ibmpartialappdelete.proc. And if it was in a module, I would, you know, stores.war/meta-inf/ibmpartialappdelete.proc. And basically what you do is you put one line represents a file that you want to delete. You can also do regular expression matching. So in my example, if I wanted to delete my index.jsp from my store, I would just put a single line that says my store/index.jsp, and it would delete that file for me. I could delete all JPEG files underneath the images directory using that example that I gave with a regular expression. So let's move on to slide number 31. So here's an example of how you can use the tooling to do a partial application update. So you would use the $adminapp update, giving it the application name as a parameter, telling it that you're using a partial application, and providing any extra parameters that you need to provide. or in the WebSphere console, you would pick partial application. The end result is that files are added, updated, or removed from the application, and occasionally, I don't have the exact list of what causes a restart, but in some cases, it will automatically restart the application for you. In particular, if you're changing metadata or adding jar files and things like that, it will restart the application. The other key message is to say, if you're doing metadata changes, don't do those in a partial application update. So, for example, if you ever wanted to add an EJB reference, for example, and that was the only change that you were deploying to an EJB module for some reason, well, because it's a metadata change, you really need to do a full module replacement. If you do a full module replacement, the application server will recognize it as being a module replacement and give you the opportunity to specify all of the binding and configuration information. If you were to do the same thing with a partial application, it doesn't process any of the metadata in the standard way. It just assumes that you're providing correct metadata and uses it as is. So it's very important that if you're doing module changes that you actually do use a module. Anything like JSP changes, XML file changes, you can use a partial application for those. Let's move to slide number 32. And this is just a special case of the previous one where you're just doing a single file update. So you don't have to build a zip file in this case. You just say, where's the source file and where does this file belong in the year? And WAS will replace that file with the source that you've identified. Okay, let's move on to slide 33. So what actually happens in the background when you do this update? Well, the application server is going to do is it's going to extract a copy of the application from the configuration repository, not from the installed apps directory. It's going to collect all that information that you gave when you did your update in the console. It's going to merge this content with that copy of the year file that it extracted. It's going to then take this information and add it back into the configuration repository and replace the old content with the new content in the configuration repository, that config directory. Typically, only one person can update the year file at a time, but there's no locking mechanism. The way it happens is you extract a file, you get sort of like a checksum type thing. When the application server adds it, checks it back in, it does a quick little comparison to see if anybody changed the year after you extracted it. If somebody has changed the year after you extracted it or after it extracted it, it will throw an error message and say, okay, it doesn't match, then you have to redo your update. WAS doesn't serialize or queue up the year updates either. So if you have multiple people doing year updates, make sure that they're all communicating with each other so that they don't step on each other's toes. Okay, let's move on to slide 34. So after that new file has been added into the configuration repository, it needs to update the installed apps directory, the runtime directory. So what's going to happen is if it's a non-managed node, it's just going to expand those assets into the local installed apps directory. If it's a federated node, it sort of asynchronously distributes the change throughout the environment, and each cluster member or each node agent will handle the processing when it gets the updated application. And typically, we need to talk about restarting. In these cases, WAS will figure out if it needs to restart your application and do so accordingly. So you have to remember that there are these two copies of the application. There's that application that's in the configuration repository, and then there's that application that's in the installed apps directory. And as long as you use the tooling provided by WebSphere, you'll be guaranteed that it does the right thing. Let's move on to slide number 35. So there are parts inside the commerce application where we actually update our year file ourselves. So these have also been changed to take advantage of this delta or this fine-grained update procedure. So things like store publish attachments, file upload, logo change, authoring server, all of these functions, and this may not be an exhaustive list, but all of these functions update the commerce year file in some way. So these have all been changed to use the WAS fine-grained update feature. Move to the next slide. The key thing is that we had one team who wrote all of this code and developed an interface so that all components could use it. So the code behaves the same way no matter which component of commerce invokes it. In the development environment, the deployment is a little bit different because we're dealing with a workspace and we're not dealing with a big year file like we are in the WAS environment. So we actually have two implementations that get invoked underneath the covers magically. You're in the toolkit environment, it's very simple. We just copy the files to the right directory. There's no concept of calling the WAS API to do the update. In the server side, magically underneath the covers, we detect that we're in the server, and what happens is if a component asks to do update, what we do is we build a partial application zip file, We use the WASDMX API to invoke the application update. We always specify that if it's being done from within the Commerce application, that there's a, we never restart the application, because if we were trying to update the application and we were restarting it at the same time, that would cause some problems. What happens is the WAS API is typically asynchronous, so it returns immediately to this update code that we've written. And what the WAS code is going to do is it's going to do kind of those processes that we talked about. It's going to extract a copy of the ear file. It's going to do all of the merging. It's going to check that back into the configuration repository and go through its process. While it's doing that, it's actually sending out events. So what we've done is we've taken this asynchronous process and we've turned it into something that's a little more synchronous. So what we do is, instead of just returning back to the component that invoked this, we wait for a failure or a complete or a timeout from the application server. So if we have a failure, we return back to the caller that we have a failure. So the component, for example, store publish could say it failed. If it's complete, store publish would say it's complete. In the case where there's a timeout, it's up to the component to decide what they want to report back to the end user. They can either treat that as a failure or as a success, and the components decide that. The key message is that when the component says it's complete, it doesn't necessarily mean it's complete. Still, that distribution process has to kick in the background. We didn't want to wait until distribution was complete, because if a node is down or we can't communicate with a node, we're never going to get distribution complete, because that node can't tell us that it's complete. So when store publish says it's complete, it may not, in fact, be complete. The changes may not show up on every node in your environment. We'll have to move on to slide number 37 then. So I guess the message is that the process can take some time. It actually has to process a rather large ear file, and it's dependent upon many factors. So it may not be immediate. Be aware that it does take time. And be aware that if it does take too long, for example, the commerce function, the accelerator thing, that we may return a timeout. On the tracing side of things, if you ever need to trace it, what I recommend that you do is you can turn on commerce tracing to see what commerce is doing for the application updates. So I gave you the trace spec for that. You would enable that on all cluster members. Or typically, if you're tracing in a cluster environment and it's not your production environment, you would shut down all cluster members except one, just because it's easier for you to control where the activities happen. And if the commerce tracing doesn't give you enough information, you actually can turn on the WebSphere application server, the application management tracing, on the deployment manager and the node agents if you're clustered. If you're not, then it's just you enable it on server one. So with those traces, you should be able to figure out what's going on underneath the covers if you do have a problem. Sometimes it's file permission. When we try to extract the ear file, when WAS tries to extract the ear file, it can't actually write to the installed app for some reason. Okay, let's move on to slide number 38. Some changes in configuration manager related to this. You know how we talked about there's this concept of two copies of the ear file inside WAS. Well, we have the same thing for configuration manager in terms of the instance configuration file. This file has now been moved into the ear. Well, configuration manager needs to manage that configuration file. So there's actually two copies. There's what we call the master copy, which is the same place where it used to be underneath the instance XML directory. So when configuration manager makes changes, it will change that master copy. There's the runtime copy, which is inside the ear underneath the XML directory, and it's always called wc-server.xml. And when configuration manager updates the master copy, what it's going to do is it's going to deploy the new copy of that into the ear file. This is done using the configuration manager UI. So to trigger that, what you have to do is you have to exit configuration manager, and that will tell config manager to deploy the updated file into the WAS environment. So it takes that file from the instances directory and it sends it over to WAS as a single file update and says, here's the path inside the ear, WAS do your magic. Move on to the next page. So if you are updating it manually, I realize that there are some configuration settings that are not exposed via Configuration Manager. So if you're ever instructed by either in our documentation or by somebody on the support team or developer, so in particular, if you're talking to like a developer inside Commerce, they may not be aware of the deployment process. Developers in Commerce don't typically deal with the deployment process other than the deployment team. So make sure that you always follow these steps, that you update the master copy first, and that you run the update ear amp target, which is documented in our information center, and I gave you an example of how to do that. As long as you follow those two procedures, you won't get into any trouble with the instance configuration file. very important that the master copy is kept in sync. Because if you do something like enabling an I feature in Commerce, what we're going to do is we're going to make the assumption that the instance configuration file underneath your instance directory is correct. So you'll always have to make sure that that guy is correct. Move on to slide 40. Talk a little bit about exporting the application, because that's important too. When you go into WAS and ask it to export the application, it completely ignores the installed apps directory. So if you were to put a file only in the installed apps directory and you ask WAS to export the application, that file would not be included in the export. What it does is it merges the metadata from the configuration repository with the ear from the configuration repository and hands that ear back to the user. So any changes that you've made in that installed apps directory would be lost if you did that procedure. Very important, because the Commerce 6-pack installer actually uses the ear export function. So if you ever hit a case where you install a Commerce 6-pack and your changes disappear, it means that you haven't been following the documented deployment procedure, and that what you should do to recover is to just redeploy your customization the proper way. Let's move on to slide 41. Basically, in our environment, everybody, WAS and Commerce, is assuming that you're using the WAS tooling to update your application. So it's very important that you do the same thing. As I mentioned on the previous slide, you know, installing a 6-pack, we export the ear file, so we'll lose all of your changes if you haven't done it properly. Migration in the future to the next release is going to use WAS utilities to do our migration, so it's also going to assume that you've updated the ear file correctly. So changes, I said maybe, but it's almost a will be lost if you don't follow the correct deployment procedure. Some other hints and tips: always export your application to back it up before you make any deployment changes. Sometimes I've seen the collapsed ear file getting corrupted, so it's always nice to have that backup just in case something goes wrong. Always back up your database, just to be safe as well. The other key note is updating the application is the same no matter what your WAS configuration is. So if you're federated, you're not federated, you're clustered, as long as you use the WAS tooling, it will do what it needs to do. Your deployment script doesn't need to be any different in a clustered environment than in a standalone environment. Move on to slide 42. A little bit of a message on static content. WebSphere application server doesn't distribute static content to remote web servers. So if you are using a remote web server and you do have static content, you're responsible for deploying that to your remote web server. Dynacache. WAS doesn't clear Dynacache when deploying changes. So be aware of that, and you may have to manually clear your Dynacache if you're using it. Let's move on to slide 43. So the most important thing to take away from this is that the process has changed, the old process won't work anymore, and yet on the surface it'll look like it works, the changes will be picked up and will be used, but as soon as you do something like enabling an I feature or installing a 6-pack, your changes may disappear. So always use the WAS utilities to update your ear file. Never just copy the files into the installed apps directory. Slide 44. So some references that I provided, there's a tutorial that I wrote on how to use this thing called a rollout update feature. That allows you to minimize downtime during an update. I think Eileen will talk about that next week when she talks about a cluster and reducing downtime and all the benefits that a cluster will give you. One of my counterparts in the application server team, AJ, has an article on flexible options for updating an application. I recommend that you read that. He has some good comments on things that you need to worry about. It's a complex process. Okay, so we'll move to slide number 45. So this chart includes a number of links of sites that provide valuable online resources for WebSphere products. DeveloperWorks offers in-depth technical information. The event link on the support pages points you to webcast and conference information. You can visit WebSphere.org for user group information and more product information. The IBM Education Assistant consists of self-help modules to get new users up on the learning curve quickly. The ESR tool is for Passport Advantage clients to open, update, or view PMRs online. And the My Support link on all product support pages lets you sign up for weekly email updates for products of interest to you. At this point, I will turn it back to Joseph.
Thank you, Eileen and Scott, for a great presentation. At this point, Michael, we would like to open the lines for questions.
And it looks like our first question today will come from Alan Sang.
Hello there. My question is regarding static content. What are some ways to manage static content in the HTTP WAS environment?
Can you clarify what you mean by manage? Do you mean how do I create and organize my static content, or how do I, as part of my deployment process, get my static content on the machine that needs it?
Part of the deployment process, and also the dilemma here, is that the upload facility within Accelerator does deploy all my assets into the year, and more often than not, those are static assets.
Yeah. One option is to have a shared file system somewhere that you can mount it on your web server machines if you have more than one. That can be problematic because depending on the file server that you're using, it could be a single point of failure.
Mm-hmm.
The other option would be to write some sort of utility that gets invoked like as a cron job that could synchronize the static content for you on a regular basis so that as like a business user does something in the accelerator that changes static content, well, it may not be immediate, but eventually it would get sent over to your remote machine.
Is there any direction in the future regarding...
My team has had some discussions with the WAS team on this. You know, we haven't really gotten very far with it, but that's about all I can say.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We have a question from Jason Verhagen.
Yes, I had a question. When you guys were deploying the full application, there was a part on there where you had the relative path to the module. Can you explain what we're supposed to put in that part again?
Okay,
is it supposed to be the full path, or is it just the path past the ear directory?
It's the path past the ear directory. So if I have an EJB module, for example, like myejb.jar, I would typically put that in the root of my ear. So what I would do is, for the relative path, I would just say myejb.jar.
Okay.
And then for the location or the source, I would give the full path to the source on the client machine.
Okay.
I guess the other thing that I want to say is that in that relative path, that means that the path and file name, quite frequently I've seen testers internally, and I've had a couple of customers with this problem where they only specify the directory to the relative path, and that caused future problems in future deployments. It's never flagged as an error. It's just what used to be a directory actually ended up being a file, and then they tried to add something into this thing that they thought was a directory. When they did so, that caused a problem because the application server said, well, one of the paths in the thing that you want to add is a file, so I'm going to assume that file is actually a zip file, and it wasn't. It was like an image file or something like that. So be mindful of that. So when it asks for the path, it includes the file name as well.
It appears there are no further questions. Mr. Lamb, I'll turn the call back over to you.
At this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Eileen and Scott, for presenting today.
Thank you, everyone.